No wonder Iqbal struggling to lasso his unicorn. Markets are galloping all over the place, but it's almost the weekend, so pack away the screen already. This is The Week That Was. I'm Simon Brown. My co-host is Julia Titilivi. And what we'll be making sense, I think it's a public holiday out there and no one told us.
Yeah. We're the last people standing.
But it's been a watching paint dry kind of week. I mean, I think we're up 1.5% in the top. So last week we had that exciting stuff. We had Wednesday where things collapsed down. We were 17% off the highs of November and we rallied up. And this week we just ground
it
out.
It didn't actually feel like it was watching paint dry because there was quite a lot going on. And specifically Russian sanctions, China trade, U.S. Trump,
yeah,
tariff
wars. Yeah, you're trying to work out what he's saying, isn't he?
So it didn't necessarily feel as boring as maybe it turned out to be.
Yeah, no, fair point. And there was some exciting stuff on the market. Steinhoff down at 204, which is the lowest level in 19 and a half years.
It's the lowest level since it listed.
Yeah, okay. November 1998. If you bought that share at any point, excluding dividends, you're underwater.
In fact, some wag on Twitter said you can get a lotto ticket for less than the price of a Steinhoff share now, which is probably
a better investment.
Exactly. You might even have a billionth chance of getting somewhere. Non-farm payrolls also started us off, of course, when we recorded the show this time last week. They hadn't come out yet, but that was kind of what sparked the nervousness. Then things recovered. What are we waiting for? Earnings season in the US?
I think we're waiting for earnings season in the US. And to channel David here for a moment, the fundamentals are there, the picture's there, the growth is coming through, the Fed is raising rates, we know this, but they're probably only middle of next year I'll be back to normalized levels of rates in the US. So all the fears that we had that saw the markets getting aggressively sold off, etc., I think we're kind of like, well, okay, that's out of the way. Donald Trump, trade wars, Syria, truthfully, no one knows. And I mean, no one knows. And so now it's a case of, well, let's see how earnings come through. And if we look back at earnings we've seen in the previous quarters last year and the like, I mean, you expect there to be earnings coming through. You expect the companies to be showing positive growth, both top line and bottom line. We all had all those hurts from the tax changes, mm-hmm. Those are probably now mostly out of the way. So earnings are going to be, they're not going to be shooting the lights out, but they're going to be solid. They're going to be there and we can get back to being bullish again.
Yeah, although is it going to be enough? That's what I wonder.
We'll find out. And there's always Europe, but no one cares about Europe. Yeah, no one cares about Europe. The US is driving us and that bus continues to go. Little break, but we're on the road still.
Mm. Also making news this week, what do KPMG audits entail? An abacus and a cocktail party? A round of golf? We're not even sure this question is rhetorical anymore. Mind you, there's nothing quite having the fox guard the hen house, but Steinhoff shareholders aren't exactly crowing with joy, and neither, it would seem, are resilience.
If you can't list at home, then New York Exchange is the obvious next step. Group 5's hanging on, just. SARS is about to come after your crypto profits, and American, Russia, and China are between them coming for everything around them. But first, part man, part lizard, part very scary, the humanoid that is Mark Zuckerberg ate humble pie, said the right things, and basically gave all the old codgers in America's full Senate 2 days of unlimited tech support. Here's sorry.
We didn't take a broad enough view of our responsibility, and that was a big mistake. And it was my mistake, and I'm sorry. I started Facebook. I run it, and I'm responsible for what happens here.
And not so sorry.
On Facebook, you have control over your information. The content that you share, you put there. You can take it down at any time. The information that we collect, you can choose to have us not collect. You could delete any of it. And of course, you can leave Facebook if you want.
Well, so
well, I don't
start?
Know. It sounds a bit Hotel California-ish. So you can check out, but they've got your data.
No, you can't. So apparently, well, we kind of knew this, right? Facebook tracks you because remember they run an ad network. So if you're not a member of Facebook, they still track you. And how do you get them to delete the data if you're not a member of Facebook? You join Facebook.
Sneaky.
Someone found it. Remember he started back in Harvard. He had the mashup thing pre-Facebook, which was to find girls in college and do the hot or not. And he got caught for that and apologized. And there was a clip I saw, which is basically every apology that he's made in the 15 years subsequent to that. He's just been saying sorry. And they just keep on rolling on.
So I didn't know that, actually. So to rank hot girls, because I did see on Twitter, once again, someone saying he just wanted a means to rank girls on their hotness, and instead he ended up installing a fascist government.
Yes. So that's where he started, and that's what the, and then it became, that was something smash up or something. Then he started the Facebook, which again was really just to you know, he'd been caught, so he started again.
But he seemed to come off quite well. And if the market reaction was anything to go by, it seemed that people bought his testimony, that he appeared competent. Certainly that was the description used by The Economist.
Yeah, and the debaters. So, I mean, we've said this before, you know, if you're not paying, you the product. And you know, Facebook offers a service. Now, whether keeping up with Auntie Matilda's worth it is a different debate in its entirety. And truthfully, if I like chocolates and they're showing me ads for chocolates, that's way better than showing me ads for, you know, something I have no interest in. So the genesis is there, but it's, I think we get spooked when they realize that they've tracked every phone call you've made in the last year, and that when they delete stuff, as he says there, they don't delete it, they just move it into a folder you can't see, so it's still actually there.
Yeah, and despite the lobbying, I think $11.5 million is what they spent on Washington lobbying last year, regulation is coming.
Regulation is coming, and if you really, really want to scare yourself, download your data from Facebook. Mm. But it is as spooky as all heck.
Mm. Well, not sorry either is Mr. Trump, as far as we can tell. The highest tweeter in the land has lobbied a grenade into global commodity markets, although we're not sure if Syria is getting the missiles he promised. But no matter, between the US, Russia, and China, trade is one big kerfuffle right now, and Madame Lagarde is not amused.
History shows us that import restrictions hurt everyone, especially the poorer consumers. Not only do they lead to more expensive products and more limited choices, but they also prevent trade from playing its essential role of boosting productivity and spreading new technologies.
Russians, mind you, just carry on trucking.
I put rubles in one jar, I put dollars in another jar, and I put euros in the third jar. So far, I'm alive.
It sounds like some Zen investment wisdom.
I think she's the Russian banking system. Although I'm not sure, is she allowed to have dollars and euros in Putin's Russia?
Yes, and where is she getting the dollars and the euros in addition to her rubles? But never mind.
Back to the trade wars. And it goes back to, and we've said this before, and we spoke about it last week, and we, you know, and Christine Lagarde alludes to it there, which is the core of capitalism, and is freedom of movement, whether it be people, concepts, ideas, money, and of course product. But it's the unintended consequences that fall off. I mean, we didn't mention it last week, but the chaps out of Ferris Bueller.
Smoot Hawley.
Yes, Smoot and Hawley from the late 20s. They started some trade tariffs on two products, which was sugar and wool. And it ended up being over 8,000 products, including goldfish. And then Congress panicked. So what Congress did is they took the right to do trade wars away from Congress and gave it to the president. They didn't expect to see Donald Trump coming. But it gets messy, and it is, you know, if any president was doing this, of any country, prime minister, chancellor, it's messy. But in this particular case, it's just downright scary.
The one thing, though, that has been said is that it almost seems as if he's forced concessions from China over things like auto trade, that China's maybe backed down. So maybe that big man rhetoric is working, or do you think that's just one tiny little concession in an overall war where no one is actually the victor?
So, and that scares me even more. And the big fear is that Donald Trump has shown thousands of people. Remember your parents? You said anyone can be president, and it turned out anyone can be president. And, you know, so in 20, 30 years' time, we might look back and he's the least loony of them. And maybe, so he's got something out of China. Now, there's obviously a lot more happening in the background, and maybe we don't know all the details. But to me, the scariest part was if he does start getting some success from something and some caveat somewhere. But he comes at it, you know, his tweet last Friday, which when you're $500 billion in the hole, you can't lose. I mean,
you're still $500 billion in the hole, Donald.
And you're conflating concepts and ideas and scaring the whole rest of the world. Mm. Yeah, we need to get Elon to get us to Mars. Trade and pork bellies might be a bit over our heads, but our Bitcoin habits have finally drawn the ire of Sharon. Sorry, SARS. Even as the rogue unit donkey takes another vicious kicking from the authorities, your happy hours spent cashing in on Bitcoin may finally be a thing of the past.
We've recently been forced to apply our minds due to the volatility in cryptocurrency and the whole media hype that surrounded it. And it was actually a natural follow through of that. We found that the most logical and appropriate methodology for taxing bitcoins was in the, or cryptocurrencies, the more generic term, was to do so exactly the same fashion as we would on any other asset. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that's important to note in that regard is I mentioned the word asset. Despite the fact that it's called a cryptocurrency, we do not regard it as a currency for purposes of taxation. We regard it as an asset.
Penalties too if you fail to declare your fund.
We would apply all the normal penalties and interest on taxpayers if they fail to declare their income, which is derived from cryptocurrencies, in their tax returns. So that doesn't change.
Of course, as someone said to me on Twitter this week, who's actually made money?
Well, someone did at some point in December.
If you weren't the buyer at that point.
But do you think this is going to, the crypto market that was ballooning, especially when prices were just going crazy, is this going to put a horrible spoke in the wheel? Because if you're going to get taxed, I mean, that was probably one of the reasons why
you
would buy
Bitcoin. It never
was.
You pay tax on your profits. It doesn't matter where it is. And the whole point that, yeah, crypto's anonymous, et cetera, et cetera. You make money, SARS wants their slice. And if you're in the US, it's IRS, et cetera.
Why should they take their slice?
Because you're South African and they want it regardless. They don't care how you go. Frankly, if you're a criminal, that SARS is like you go to jail. But hey, there's some tax liabilities to pay too. They want their money. And anyone who thought they could trade crypto because it was all this. So, its thing is, it's perhaps it's anonymous and it depends which exchange you're on, because of course the local exchanges have to, you know, the rules require them to report and the like. You can dodge it, but as the gentleman said there, you are dodging taxes and that's a crime.
He didn't seem to take kindly when I said to him as he was leaving the studio, it's a no fun zone at SARS. He sort of laughed nervously and shuffled
SARS,
out.
It's not designed to be a fun zone.
And speaking of pork bellies, the Listeriosis scandal has had a huge impact on South Africa's pork producers. While we still wait for answers, here's what's happening out there.
The processing market took a huge, there was a huge decrease in the demand for the processing side. So it went down up to 75% on the processing side. But the difficulty is when you don't sell in the process side, you push it back into the fresh meat market. And that gives you a bit of an oversupply to a certain extent until you've created a new demand. And that's the reason why the price came down so drastically.
I suppose if you like fresh pork sausages, you're winning, but
you're winning,
not
but
if you're...
Have you eaten processed meat in the last little while?
No one has.
I was at a hotel a few weeks ago, big sign, we don't serve processed meat until further notice. And I said to the manager, what's further notice? He said, ever.
After the break, Steinhoff, Sagamatha, who's worse? Stay with us. Welcome back. In the Rogues Gallery this week, the contention for top dog was fierce, but we reckon that Steinhoff for Gaul takes the cake. The 325 million euro prepayment loan, essentially a prepayment for ShopRite loans, just as the company was about to implode. And thanks to some sneaky Dutch law, that's all only coming out of the woodwork now.
So it was perfectly legal in terms of Dutch law, but there's legal and there's right. And yeah, so he basically wanted to, the shares which he was going to sell, the ShopRite shares, he basically got prepayment for them literally in the weeks or so before the story broke. They can claim that it was ahead of the news, but by that time there was already a lot of smoke. We'd had the German publication. We already had a share price that had been under pressure. I mean, ShopRite had gone from 95 to 40 before that story broke. And just more smacks of Dodge.
Steinhoff had gone from 95 to 40.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, ShopRite was
sorry,
still
not
pretty,
ShopRite. Yeah, ShopRite was still
was actually
north
on a
of
boom.
200. Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not entirely sure if that loan's been repaid. Do we
so
know
it
that
hasn't.
Yet?
It hasn't, surely, because if it had been repaid, they would have told us. The absence of telling us indicate, because as soon as this dodgy thing comes, if they'd repaid it, they would have said, yeah, terribly dodgy, terrible idea, but don't worry, we got the money back. The first thing they would have told us that they'd been repaid. So I think we can assume it hasn't been repaid. And whilst Christa Visa might have 325 million euros. He's down to his last billion or so.
Well, no, it's a precarious position to be in. And just also on the Star share sale this week, 6% or thereabouts of the Star stock got sold in the market via Book Build. Only raises about 3.75 billion rand, though. So that's a bit of a drop in the ocean as far as what we think Steinhoff's liabilities
I mean, they told us at the time it was 6 billion euros when the bad news broke. It's somewhere between 100 and 150 million rand. And they've raised, and they've raised 20 or 30. I mean, they're not even scratching the surface at this point. And we can see, I mean, that share price. And you know, at the time, I remember saying there's going to be a drip feed of news. One, because they're managing it poorly. Why didn't they tell us about Visa? But two, because truthfully, the directors don't know either. I mean, they're finding stuff out pretty much moments before the rest of us, you know, as it hits the market. Ergo, the properties from the story from last week.
Just maybe a last point on Steinhoff. I've been getting some fairly testy emails from people saying, how can it possibly be worth 3 Rand? It's going to go back to 14. Louis is one of our dedicated viewers, and I think he's been trading it very successfully. But I'm not sure if it's going to go back. I think there's, because there's such uncertainty as to what the actual assets are and the liabilities. That's what everyone's trying to piece out, and it's just not clear.
And it's not clear. Nobody knows. The company doesn't know, so therefore we don't know, so we can't put a valuation on. So if you're buying it right now, you really are just poking in the dark. Trading it, sure, there's nice moves, there's nice volumes, you don't need gearing, you can trade Steinhoff as a short-term trader. But as an investor, as you quote Jean-Pierre Fester in Financial Mail this week, it's their bonds are trading below par, which suggests that the bond market is saying that actually there's no value in the equity whatsoever. Now that's a big stretch, but from everything we've heard so far, it's certainly a possible outcome. It absolutely is. It's scary as heck. And then, of course, there's the good Dr. Iqbal Survey. For sheer unabridged kaputs, the man deserves to parade as African unicorn around the winner's enclosure. But the bullshit, after all, is so thick and swampy, we're not sure even he can pull this one off. And it turns out he can't. He hasn't. And who cares? There's always New York. And, of course, filth failed in London. Try Hong Kong. And if you haven't read Sam Sol's piece, please do yourself a favor. Here he is.
There's a massive disconnect and disparity between the placement price and the net asset value of the consolidated company. In other words, investors are being asked to punt on an extremely optimistic view of where this company is going to go. And our major concern is, well, if private investors want to do that, if they want to, you know, believe that this is going to be the next African Amazon, well, good luck to them. But there are suspicions and concerns that the Public Investment Corporation, which kind of backed and underwrote the initial purchase of independent media, is going to be pushed into backing this hugely speculative deal.
And then all moot because they hadn't submitted their documents to CIPC, and so JSC wouldn't list them. Which, truthfully, the JSC should have noticed that small little detail. But
well, it's quite interesting because I spoke to the JSC on Monday and I said, have they actually met the listings requirements? And they said, yes, they have. And the JSC has a degree of discretion. In fact, it can choose to not admit a company that's met the listing requirements if it feels that, and it can also similarly choose to admit a company that hasn't.
Yeah.
But I said that's quite wide discretion. I said no, it's very narrow discretion under the Financial Markets Act. So at that point, everything was plain sailing for Friday's listing, and then of course it all came out of the woodwork. But what we still don't know for sure is how much money they've actually raised, because only on IOL, which is of course an independent mouthpiece, that they say they've raised close to 4 billion rand. There's no sense in that regard,
and
that was the minimum that they had to raise before they went.
Yeah, there's no evidence of it, and the valuation. I mean, Sam Sol's. Hey, yeah, me and Sam read the same 212-page document. It probably hurts both our heads. And he writes a brilliant piece, and I'm just left shaking my head. So I went back and did some digging. They're looking at about doing, if they'd got their listing valuation, about 100 times sales, maybe 200 times on sales was their valuation, not earnings. Sales. So I went back to the dot-com craze and found, so pets.com got to 110. Amazon got to 95 times sale. They were like, they were more crazy than the dot-com craziness and the crazy. Remember, pets.com business model was to sell pet food at a loss and somehow make a business out of it.
It just had a cool name, pets.com. But just one last point. Do you think he will succeed in New York or Hong Kong for that matter?
No, I don't. I think he's going to need a plan B. And truthfully, if he has, as he said, but on Wednesday we had submitted the relevant documents, well, then come back, you know, resubmit, redo the process. I suspect they didn't get the money they needed and they
need, this is a smokescreen.
They need a frantic plan B.
Mm. Well, not being able to report profits isn't uniquely a media thing. Turns out construction is still in the hole and it ain't getting smaller. Just look at Group 5.
I'm hoping that this is as bad as it gets. So the trends that we're looking at seems to suggest that this is as bad as it gets. So the second half will not necessarily be returning us to profitability, but it will not be as worse as this first half.
And here's Temba on how they're going to dig themselves out.
Predominantly, we were a construction business. You know, 80% of our revenue came from construction activities. So what we are doing now is to kind of move away from the construction, domination, more into the development of infrastructure assets and the operations and maintenance.
His toll roads in Poland, which, yes, as we've learned, you don't do toll roads at home, you do them in somebody else's home.
But they did. They sold off a bit of that,
yes,
business.
I think Green Bay came to try and buy the rest at, I forget how much, more than the net asset value of the entire company, well, more than the market cap of the entire company,
and
they got
they
turned
no.
down.
Yes, yeah. And now we understand why. I mean, do you think, Group 5 in its next 5 years is not going to look anywhere like what it did in the last five
And I think that's
years.
The way, and we've seen it with Myron Roberts at the same time. The point with construction is it is a mug's game, particularly in the new reality where construction companies can be anywhere. You go to Australia, it's not just the South African and Australian constructors there, it's the Chinese and the Brazilian and the Italian and the Spanish and everybody else. So your competitive edge is margin squeeze. So you don't want to be in the construction space. And then, of course, Keith McLachlan messaged me this morning and says, contrarian, says, time to buy construction. He's, I think, firmly tongue-in-cheek, and I'm not touching them. But we've lost, I mean, Moen Roberts and Group 5 are two of the biggies, and they're, like, turning their back on construction because of, frankly, too much capacity.
Mm.
Resilient isn't exactly winning the market back in their droves either. Well, the company's been exonerated by an independent review headed by former Auditor General Shakeek Faki. It appears he didn't have much to work with, and he didn't really talk to any of the said detractors. Which, why is Rock Hefner still hanging around the badly named B-movie villain?
Sorry, I just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, and I managed to bundle him, so now he's really, really after me recording him.
So Rock Hefner. A Swiss national who's been involved in some very dodgy business
and popped up in 2011 in Noseweek and very gently brushed over that he's the one who gave the money to
Mr. Oberholzer,
who is the man who was doing a lot of dealings, who is a groundskeeper at a Carl Army school, and this was not seemed deemed worthy of investigating or talking to Cy Jacobs and others.
I mean, one of the things that Mr. Faki did say in the report is that he hadn't had time yet to talk to the detractors. So it was 361, it was Arkham Capital, and then latterly Mergence came out with a report. And he didn't want to delay the report, but he would still speak to them and then put out what they had to say. So I guess that's maybe part two of this independent review.
So. And of course, we haven't seen the report. All we've got is the summary from Resilient.
Hasn't won back the market's confidence yet.
No, the share's bounced. It's looking good. Technically, it's looking nice. Corin Richards posted some pretty charts of it. But from a fundamental perspective, I don't think this independent review really did much at all. If anything, it's muddied the waters and brought B-star movies and actors into the frame who we didn't know about before. And finally, in the words of The Economist, when Mr. Zuckerberg was competent, his interrogators were often clueless. So one of the most watched testimonies of recent times, here is a little sample.
You said back then that Facebook would always be free. Is that still your objective?
Senator, yes.
Well, if so, how do you sustain a business model in which users don't pay for your service?
Senator, we run ads.
I see. That's great.
If I'm emailing within WhatsApp, does that ever inform your advertisers?
No, we don't see any of the content in WhatsApp. It's fully encrypted.
Let's say